last one, too.
Welcome, everyone. I'd like to welcome you to the December 1st Othello City Council Workshop Meeting. If you'd all please rise. And I'll open with a short prayer. Father in heaven, we thank you for this opportunity to assemble and to peacefully make decisions that affect the future direction of this community. And I ask that you give us wisdom and understanding and knowledge as we deliberate tonight's proceedings. Amen. I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all. On our agenda, I'd like to move to item 1.03, roll call. Corey Everett had notified me previously he was going to be on vacation, so I would entertain a motion tonight to excuse Corey Everett.
Make that motion.
Second.
Motion's been made and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. In addition, Angel Garza was going to be out of town today, or this evening, so I would entertain a motion to excuse Angel Garza from tonight's proceedings.
Make that motion.
Second.
Motion's made and seconded. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Motion carried. Moving on to item 1.04, citizen input. This is a moment in time where we allow citizens to present information to the City Council. If you have questions or concerns you'd like to address, please raise your hand. Sean Bates, please step to the microphone and state your name and address for the record. And then you may address the council.
Thank you. Mayor and council, my name is Sean Bates. I live at 1156 East Juniper Street here in Othello. I want to just bring again my request for the city to find a way, please, to include for next year, to 2015, a budget amendment to be able to have a for real, genuine, handicap accessible restroom facility, male, female, both sides. We've got two handicap accessible restrooms in Kiwanis Park. I was just at Pioneer Park today. It has a handicap accessible facility. The facility at Lions Park is wanting, and I wanted to bring that to your attention again and just raise your awareness. Thank you.
Thank you, Sean. Is there anyone else tonight who would like to present information to the Othello City Council? Okay. Moving on to item two, current business. 2.01, volunteer recognitions. This is the moment when the mayor and the city council recognize community volunteers for their distinguished service to this community. And tonight we have 1, 2, 3, 4 recipients of that award. So what I'm going to do is I'm going to come down and I will give a brief introduction of each one of the recipients. If you would please come up as I announce you, and then once I've given you your award, would you please remain standing with the rest of the group. And tonight's first award is for Terry Thompson. Hello, Terry.
Thank you, Sean.
I want to welcome you to tonight's meeting as we intend to honor you as a distinguished volunteer in this community. Terry, it just reads like a who's who of about every volunteer group organization this community has. He's been a Boy Scout leader since 1983. He's been on the Adams County Fair Board, served for 25 years. Adams County Livestock Sales Committee for 15 years, 7 as the president. Washington State Fair Association board member for 6 years. He was on the Othello City Council for 2 years. He was also a Civil Service Board member for the last 18 years, 8 years as chairman. He was an Othello Citizen of the Year by the Chamber of Commerce in 2002. He has been a Port Commissioner for Othello since 2007. He's been on the Adams County Development Council since 2008. He's the Adams County Board of Adjustments since 2006. He's been on the Othello Planning Commission since 2008. And he's been on the Greater Othello Chamber of Commerce Board since 2011, and he is also the Chamber of Commerce's current president. He's an Othello Community Hospital Board member since 2011. And he's been an auctioneer for 33 years, helping with benefit and livestock auctions, events, chamber, all the different service clubs. Terry, I think, has had a chance to, he volunteers his time to help each one of those clubs raise money. And tonight, I can't think of a better person to receive this award from the City of Othello and the Mayor and the City Council. Community Service Award presented to Terry Thompson for providing outstanding volunteerism to the City of Othello, 2014. And if you want to say a few words.
I'm honored tonight that the Mayor and Council recognize me. There's a lot of good people that serve in this community. And I'm humble. I enjoy people, and as everybody that knows me, I enjoy talking. And that's one reason. And some people wonder if I'm even married, because I'm gone a lot. But I have a good wife, and I love her dearly. We've been married for 40 years, and we've raised 9 children in this community. And I've had a lot of fun serving, and hope to keep serving. Thank you.
I hope faith allows you to continue to serve, too. Thank you. The next distinguished award is for Jesse Dominguez. Jesse? Jesse has, if you haven't noticed it, at the different events, especially the auctions and special fundraiser, Jesse and his business, DMZ Events, and his wife, Amy, and now some new business partners, they continually do the decorations. Most recently, I recall the Beautification Committee's fundraiser that they had earlier in the summer, the annual Chamber of Commerce banquet, and the Hospital Auxiliaries fundraiser, the Lions Club's fundraiser, and quite a number of those type of events. And Jesse, without hesitation, also again at the Animal House, party that was held after the build was going on out there. Without hesitation, Jesse has continually volunteered his time and his resources with his business to honestly just be a blessing to this community. And so some of his other accomplishments is he's been a Lions Club member. He's also now currently a member of the Lions Club. Are you a past president?
I'm vice president.
Vice president. Chamber board member. He's just been elected to the Chamber of Commerce Board. He helped establish the Juvenile Detention Alternative Initiative Program in Adams County when he worked at the, which was basically working with these juveniles in the community to help integrate them into a productive life in society. And he was responsible for gathering volunteers in the community to work with these disadvantaged youth and problem youth and help turn them into good citizens for our community. He's also been a member of the Beautification Committee as a volunteer. He's a member of the Adams County Development Council, and he's helped establish many community service partnerships. And I'm honored tonight to present this award to Jesse Dominguez, Community Service Award, for providing outstanding volunteerism. Thank you, Jesse. Thank you. Say a few words.
I just want to thank the City of Othello, the Mayor. It's an honor to be up here and my wife, who's a distinguished all these things, and one of my favorite events in community is the distinguished young women's Cinderella Ball. That's one of my favorite things to do here in Solo, and we continue to help out where we can, and just learn from people that carry them on a car ride together to serve people, and but just, you know, looking up people like you and serving the community.
This is the last two awards is a twofer. A husband and wife team, Dulcie Field and Tracy Field, would you please come forward? Welcome, yes. Let's start with Dulcie, can we? Since she's closest. Dulcie is the chair of the Healthy Communities. She helped develop a logo and a committee. She's created partnerships with the school and restaurants to demonstrate healthy choices to children in their eating habits. The Taste of Othello event, she's been a major thrust of that. She recently organized a walk to school day, which was a very successful event. Since my kids had grown up, I wasn't even aware of that, so I heard more about that today. Dulcie, you've been a member of the Rotary for how long?
3 years.
3 years. She's a member of the Othello Rotary Club. Probably more than any other single event that has Dulcie and Tracy standing here. Dulcie is the president of the swim team board, and they successfully hosted a regional event bringing over 450 swimmers, endless motorhomes and parents and tent city in the park. Tremendous undertaking. This swim team and its board undertook this event. They had a dunk tank at the 4th of July. They did a lot of things, and I just am really honored to give this award to Dulcie Field. I'll let you both speak after I'm done. Now, the next award goes to her husband, Tracy. In addition to being a swim team volunteer, being the chief personal assistant to Dulcie with the swim team events they were on, he's also been a big part of the community garden in Othello. And he's been on a hands-on committee member. He advises other growers. He repairs the watering system as necessary. And Tim Taft stated, we would not have the community garden without Tracy. He's always helping family and neighbors with yard work or whatever's necessary. And in addition to that, he's a great dad and husband. And we want to honor Tracy and Dulcie both today for their accomplishments and volunteering to this community. Thank you. Yes, you do. Now you have to talk.
Well, thank you. And thank you to the City Council as well. I think, I think that we both have really embraced Othello as our home. We're not from here originally. I'm actually a Colorado High School alum. So for me to say I love Othello, I never thought I'd actually say that. But I do. Love to be part of the community and look forward to many, many more years of giving back. I think once you do things like this, you want to do more. And we both are very fortunate to work with other people that are very passionate about what we want to do within the community as well. So we're very grateful for all of our partners.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Okay. Thank you, volunteers. Moving on to item 2.02 in our agenda, we have the pleasure of having Paul Stoker, president or chairman, Paul, of the groundwater management area, GWMA. I think he'll come forward and tell us exactly what his title is.
I am the title of Executive Director of the Groundwater Management Area.
Okay.
And for those of you who don't know, the Groundwater Management Area has been around for more than 15 years. It has been in the past meeting in this room every fourth Thursday for about 12 years. And it's basically run by the four county commissions. There are some citizen members. But the purpose of me being here tonight is that about 2 years ago, we petitioned the Office of Columbia River, State of Washington, for approximately $500,000 to do an assessment for potable water resources and future potable water resources for the municipalities of Moses Lake and Othello. And here tonight, we're effectively handing over the results of that assessment for Othello. And you see the front page of the draft. It's in draft form because we're still, you know, it's always in draft form to get done. But so what I'd like to do is just give you some summary results of that tonight, and then ask you if you have questions, because it's a fairly large and complicated document. I've handed out a handout to you, and so the things I would like to tell you that are in the review draft without reading it word for word is you have six production wells. They're all basalt wells. They're all in the one of them. They all have been deteriorating static water level wise for many years. And in the evaluation, if you can open that up to that screen right there. In the evaluation, this is the summation of the condition of the City of Othello's municipal water supplies. The red line you see is the demand on from your water supply report that you file with the state. It's a 2% increase per year for the next, I believe, 30 years approximately, 25 years, to 2045 anyway. That shows the increase in demand that your municipality will be expecting. The blue line, however, is the delivery capacity at the maximum capacity requirements for the current six wells that you have. You'll notice you only have 2 years, roughly, before you will not be able to meet your maximum demands as defined by the highest point in time in the year, probably in August, be my guess, when your stakeholders are requesting water and your capacity to provide for them, it isn't met. So that's what you see right there on that crossroads. So in that capacity, your city has drilled a well out east of town. They call it well number 9. It is also a basalt well in anticipation of this issue of trying to keep up with the demands. These wells will continue to deteriorate, and we've been working with basalt wells for a long, long time, and we're the primary hydrologic studies behind the Odessa Subarea process. It would be my expectation that realize that that blue line is based on the historical data we've gotten from you. It's probably too conservative. Most basalt wells don't drop down like that. When they get down to here, they start curtailing fairly fast. Just put a little reality into your life. Okay, what's in the report is an evaluation of what your options are. What available options for water supply replacement do you have? These blue lines represent the salt wells that are not rechargeable. They contain no modern water. Their water is around 20 to 30,000 years old, and it has no evidence of recharge. So where are we going to find water once that water is depleted? As I've been here before from in front of the council and stated this, easy metaphor to observe this supply of water in the city of Othello is being pumping basically out of a bathtub. And your water is contained by some geologic structures, and you are utilizing the volume that's there. and it will be depleted at some point in time, apparently, probably soon. So, the first summation of the assessment is deterioration as depicted by this and the time frame. The second one is the options. The options you have in the Othello area are to continue drilling deeper wells, basalt wells, like you have in the past, in the area where you're at. The second option is to try to go closer to east of us, where there's possibly some shallower rechargeable water, and try to harvest some of that. And thirdly is to try to receive water from the irrigation district project, Potholes Canal, which runs nearby town, which is a sustainable source of water. Each of these all have disadvantages, and so part of the process of us doing this is to attach costs, because that's always the dictating responsibility to figure out how much it costs. So the screen that you see in front of you right now is a representation of the depletion calculator, we call it. And this depletion calculator has several thousand sets of values behind it, and including some that some of your consultants that are on contract with you participated in with cost and engineering wise. And there are the ability to select almost an infinite amount of options, combinations over the next 25 years, and then to see how much they're going to basically cost you and how much how much potential water you will harvest from that source. So, to begin the options, what I did was I printed out three results from that particular calculator, and they're in front of you right here. These three are summed with the statistical sheet that's on the front. And the options are titled options A and B and C. If you will turn to option A, and if you would bring up option A, there you go. Option A is we've selected drilling several basalt wells. Each rise you see here as the years go by is another well similar to your well number 9 that's out east. And if you could slide over to the left a little bit there, the other way, to see the graphs. Anyway, up here you have, this part on the left is what is on your sheet on the front. And if you look at it, you'll see that option A, pardon me if I get my glasses out, option A has five, well, basically number 9s. They cost roughly $90 an acre foot in construction costs, and they will reap for you. And you need to move over to see the graphs. Okay, so the cost per acre foot is here. Of those five wells at $90 an acre foot, you harvest about 153,000 acre feet over the life of the wells. And total costs around $14 million for that particular purpose. The thing to remember, though, is that when you get done with well number 5, go back to the graph, please. You'll see that in the year that you finally drill the last well, you still only have 1 or 2 years worth of water left. As you see, your graph will still continue to deteriorate because these are basically basalt wells. I will make a comment that well number 9 appears to have some new water in it. We don't know how much. It would probably be a year's worth of use before we would have any understanding of how much, and that would affect that curve somewhat. But still, a significant amount or almost all of that well would be still declining, similar to this graph. If you turn to option B, this is option B. Option B is jumping around all over the place. Option B shows well number 9 as you drilled it there east of town. It also shows three increments of 4 mgd of potholes water through a storage process called ASR, storing the water into the salts under the city. And you'll notice that, this little thing doesn't work very good, that you have pretty much stable water supply out to 2045. It goes down just slightly because it still shows use of the original basalt well number 9. In this case, we shut off, artificially shut off, all of the basalt wells that are in town in 2020, I believe that's the year, and still leaves you with sufficient sustainable water. The reason for shutting off the wells is twofold. One is, if you're going to prepare an ASR project like this, your current city wells will probably be involved in both injecting and harvesting the water that you would clean from the potholes canal. And secondly is that at some point in time, as the water capacity in the basalt layers becomes marginal, you'd probably want to shut the wells up and leave the remaining basalt water as a backup, not to have it completely gone, is an observation. And the third one, option C, oh, I'm sorry, let's go to the costs, my mistake. Move over and down to the right. Okay, here we have the costs. $18 million for that includes the well and the three ASRs. You notice the acre feet harvested is 348,000 acre feet over the lifetime, and you're at around $90 for the water in the drilled well, and about 53, I believe, for the ASR water. And if you go to the last one, option C, this one presumes, because you can, not that you would, it presumes you don't even hook up well number 9, just because I want to see what it would do with all surface water. In this particular scenario, we have added 4 increments of ASR capacity, and then 2 years later, or a year later, shut off the basalt wells. And this provides you with this margin of sustainable water, which you see the supply line stays current level for the life of the city. And the cost is down below, I believe it's somewhere in the range of $50 an acre foot. Comment from us is that because we're costing this out in small increments, that if you built one that size, it's likely to be substantially less in cost. Can't tell you exactly how much, but substantially less. So the dollar acre feet, the acre foot dollar value would be lower. Now, real quickly, would you open up the GY frame? That's right there, right down here. There you go. And would you drop down? And we're going to show you how this works. Click on the begin selection. Click there. Click number 2. That's your well number 9, 2 miles east of town. Select 2015. Assuming we get it next year, click the button. Shows that you have that supply right there. You would then close the form. And you can see we have added well number 9. And if you go back up to begin selecting options and click on the surface water options right here, and you see you have multiples of options of either treated canal water, non-treated canal water for irrigation only, or for storing it or not storing it. And, okay. So that's the tool that we've given to you. You can play with it as you wish, combinations of such. And that's about my 10 minutes, I believe. So you can ask all the questions you like.
Council. I have a clarification I need from you is when you talk about Paul pumping water in, you know, into this ASR aquifer storage recovery or yes. retrieval, and you talk about taking on, not pumping out of our basalt wells, which are existing 7 or 8 wells that we have right now online. Are you meaning only during the half of the year? Because during the other half of the year, we're going to need water.
What it means is that you'll budget the water that you put down the well, and you then expecting to pump the water back up out of the well. Pumping out of a salt well in the same body of water means you would be pumping in excess of what you put in. So when I refer to continuing using your basalt wells for supply, what it means is you continue to deteriorate the static water level that's under you. In essence, you're really pumping out of the same water. It's a matter of budgeting your water. Did that make sense?
Yeah, it does. So when you're talking about the time frame, let's start in January when there, or actually the canal system flows in March. Is that correct?
It turns off in October and back on the 1st of April.
1st of April. Okay. So 1st of April, while we are now receiving water into our treatment plant, are we going to supply the city with,
yes.
Is that your model?
Yes.
Will you supply the city with water through that in addition to excess water is going to be pumped into the aquifer?
Yes.
Okay.
Under that option, yes.
Is there any way to preliminarily estimate what the recovery rate of that water pumped into the basalt wells would be?
The state, I believe, defines it as 95%. I think it's 95%. They allow you to pump back out 95%, and the state gets the other 5%.
Huh.
Yes, that's the way it works.
Okay.
But you're in a confined environment, so unless there's another well somewhere in your region, and there is one other large well in your region, and probably you may end up negotiating some relationship with them regarding use of that body of water.
Good.
Now, when you figure your cost per acre feet, is that including the cost of what it's going to be with the Bureau of Reclamation?
No.
And the cost of the water?
No.
So that'll be on top of?
That would be on top of it. Right now, it's discussions around $60 to $70 an acre foot. Correct. The operational costs, we didn't calculate as we've gone through them back and forth and back and forth. They're probably going to be relatively similar. You're pumping from pretty deep now, but there will be similar costs either way you go. Some of the major costs you have to try to use cheap water in the report, you'll find is that if you try to use the puddles water without storing it or without treating it, just for irrigation around town for your yards, it's a grand idea. It's a wonderful idea, as long as your city was plumbed for it to begin with. And so that's where the costs come, is to runs about $5 million a mile to refit your city with secondary irrigation system, which makes it very expensive, which is why the cost, if you pick those cost options here, you'll run your costs really high. Yes.
So what is the cost on the treatment plant?
Be more specific, I guess.
You were talking about we're going to store water, run it through the treatment plant,
mm-hmm.
and pump it into the
cost of operations.
ASR, yeah. What is the cost of the treatment plant?
The cost to build the treatment plant is that the major portion of the cost that you see listed on here for an ASR project. And it's listed on your sheet there. And operations are relatively acceptable for cleaning the water from the potholes canal because, and I know this really sounds bad, but the consultants say, well, once you get rid of the floaties and the bugs, it's clean. Now, what that means is there's no chemicals or really bad environmental things contaminating the water from the bottles. So it's not very difficult to clean up, is what they're trying to tell you, cost-wise. Did I get that right, Larry? Oops. I want to say something out of tune there. So yes, can relatively clean up the water to an acceptable standard relatively inexpensively from the source of the bottles canal. Yes.
Thank you, Paul. Council, any further? Okay, yep, thank you for your report. Okay. Moving on to item 2.03, 14th Avenue Street Project Report. Wade, did you have some information you wanted to present to council before our engineering firm?
Council, Mayor, we have been looking at this 14th Avenue project for a while. You know, as you all are aware, we have TIB funding for it. And so we're going to try and move forward with the project next year. In doing so, we looked at several options or several things we need to consider strongly, and we kept getting more and more factors that we need to consider. We boiled it down to one major issue, and that is the intersection of Scootney and 14th. And in that intersection, the original plan was a four-way stop, but after a traffic study conducted back in June, I believe it was, that stop sign was not going to be adequate to handle the traffic flow. No way, no how. And so we looked at other options to do that. Came up with two. One was a traffic signal, and the other is a traffic a circle, a roundabout. So we look at this more and look at more things that are factored into this. We look at things like the CBHA development, which was not part of the equation when we first got this project. We look at some of the things that go on with CBHA. We look at the possible development down south of 26 that's going to affect this. We look at other development that's going on in the area. And we come up with the equation that this intersection is going to be a major intersection in town. So it has to, the decision to go one way or the other is very important. So the group of us sitting around decided it was so important that, and I'm talking to the mayor, we made the decision that you all should be very involved in this and give us input and direction on which way to go. With that in mind, we decided to invite Larry and Mike from GNO to make a presentation tonight to give you pros and cons and cost involved to the city and to the adjoining developers around Scootney and 14th. They'll be involved in this, and then give us some guidance on which direction we want to go. The important part of this presentation is not just to hear Larry talk, obviously, but it's to ask a lot of questions. So please, as he's talking, he's prepared for interruptions, as I interrupted him a while ago when we were talking about this, and prepared to discuss all options. I've also got, of course, our public works director here, Terry, and I've also invited our police chief to make a present in our presentation, but to have his input as well as necessary to talk about safety. So tonight's the night to talk about this. We've got from now till whatever you guys get tired of doing it, but please exhaust all your questions. That said, however, if you think of something down the road, please email me, come talk to me, we'll ask other questions before we make this decision. Another thing that Larry's going to talk about is an option to change the scope of the project from a five-lane road between Cemetery and 26, but neck that down to basically a three-lane road, and then take the money and improve 14th North Cemetery, overlay that, make it, in other words, make the whole of 14th from Main Street down to 26 a better road. But that comes with some pros and cons as well. So with that, Larry, I'll turn it over to you, and you're on.
Thank you, Wade.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor and Council. Thank you for the wonderful introduction. We basically just wanted to refresh everyone's memory on the 14th Avenue project and then go into the details that Wade was referring to. The city received a grant from an organization called the Transportation Improvement Board, TIB, for the widening and reconstruction of 14th Avenue from Cemetery Road down to State Route 26. And next slide. The roadway section, or street section, if you will, that was approved in the funding option and actually goes back quite a few years, even before our involvement in and the city's review of 14th Avenue, there was a discussion of a center turn lane, a north and a southbound travel lane, and then on the outside of that would be two parking lanes that would turn into right turn pockets as you're traveling either north or south on 14th, and you'd come to a separate intersection. One thing to remember is this was developed before a lot of the current development that is either going on or is now planned for 14th Avenue. And then curb gutter sidewalk on both sides, and an overall right-of-way width of 90 feet centered on that street section. We'll get to the roundabout in a minute here, but the city match that I think helped us get the funding was 20% of the overall cost of the project, TIB picking up the other 80%. That match is $490,000. In discussions with staff recently, we've looked at, like Wade said, the impact of all the growth that's going to be going on, either has been going on or will be going on 14th, and looking at how those traffic volumes affect the whole corridor, it was determined that we do need to do something at 14th and Scutney, and probably as well something at 14th and SR 26, but that's going to come down the road a bit, possibly when the port looks at developing its property at the southwest corner of the highway and at that point Reynolds Road or south of 14th. The options that were discussed for 14th and Scutney range from basically as is, which is stop signs at all four corners, to a traffic signal, just standard traffic signal, or the potential for a roundabout, which was brought up with discussions with CBHA. One of the issues that there was concern about with roundabout was pedestrian safety, particularly around the schools. So we've included in that what's called pedestrian actuated signals, which you see in some communities where a pedestrian will go up and instead of it being a regular traffic light, you'll have just a flashing light that turns red when the pedestrian pushes the button. And we've looked at the potential for that on 14th, north of the roundabout, south of the roundabout, and also west on Scutney. These hash marks here would be the crosswalk, the traffic or the pedestrian actuated signal would then be keyed from both sides of 14th, both sides of Scutney.
So to summarize so far, the options to the flow of traffic on 14th and Scutney is either a roundabout.
Roundabout, traffic signal.
Or stop signs.
Or stop signs.
And the problem with the stop signs was?
According to
the traffic study.
Yeah, according to the traffic study, there's going to be such volumes out there, not only now, but in a six-year period when we feel all the growth will hit from CBHA, housing development, whatever else develops along the highway at 14th, that there's going to be so much traffic that it will be overloaded to the point of gridlock. We talked at one point when we presented the traffic study called level of service, and the level of service just gets worse and worse on 14th as more traffic is introduced, more growth is introduced, and without doing something to resolve the impact at that particular intersection, it will approach gridlock fairly quickly. With that, Mike's going to talk a little bit about the pros and cons of each of these options.
Okay. Sorry, I just wanted to cue that up a little bit.
Oh, okay.
So,
I'm Mike.
Hi. I'm also with Grant Osborne, just in case you're not met me previously. So,
So a few things. The traffic signal, I don't have a good depiction of the traffic signal itself, but the traffic signal at this intersection, let me just go off on the roundabout first. So the roundabout has to have some certain pros and cons to it. You can see it's a pretty large roundabout, and you can see these lines. These dashed lines here are the right-of-way lines as they're currently platted for these two lots, lots 8 and this is lot 20 down here. These two lots are certainly going to be impacted by the roundabout here. So that shows you that the roundabout has a pretty good size footprint there. It's going to take up quite a bit of space, and it's going to impact the two lots. The roundabout itself, roundabouts in general have been shown to be a safer alternative than a stop sign intersection or a signalized intersection. They've been shown to reduce traffic accidents significantly, and in particular, the fatality accident rates can be reduced significantly by some studies say as much as 90%. So in general, that's because you don't have the T-bone collision type intersections or somebody, you know, blowing the stoplight completely and running and hitting someone at a higher rate of speed. Roundabouts have a tendency, as another pro, to be able to take a little bit more traffic on. That generally the true efficiencies in a roundabout come when all four of the legs receive about the same amount of traffic, so that things can just be kind of continuously moving. If it's unbalanced a little bit, it's not quite as efficient, but it's still generally more efficient than a signal or certainly a stop sign. So a roundabout also doesn't typically, unless you really wanted to put a very nice statue of Terry or Wade or the mayor there, or maybe the school district personnel in the middle of the, and light it and, you know, and put some significant landscaping kind of improvements in there or something. There's generally no operating costs associated with the roundabout. That's something that you do have with the signal. You do have some annual operations and maintenance costs there. And then the other thing that a roundabout will tend to do is it'll tend to slow the traffic down coming into the roundabout in all directions. So it'll act as sort of a traffic calming measure. So it'll help to reduce the vehicle speeds up and down the road. It keeps people from speeding. You can't really run through this circle, you know, at 50 miles an hour without making doing some damage or cutting across the drivable apron there and making life rather unpleasant for you as you're coming across the intersection. So it does have some cons. The cons in this instance are that it is a bigger footprint than what you'd need at an intersection for a signal intersection or a stop control intersection. And in this case, it does impact these two lots, and it's possible that the city might have to purchase those two lots from the developer in this case. So there could be some costs there. The other thing about a roundabout is that they're not common here in Othello for certain. You guys don't have one anywhere right here in the general area. So there's a learning curve involved as people learn how to drive through a roundabout. And lots of times you'll hear a lot of complaints about them until people figure out how to really use them. So that's something to be aware of. But, you know, one way to mitigate that is certainly roundabout education. I know they did a significant amount of roundabout education when the DOT was putting in the roundabout there in Mattawa. If you've not driven through it, it's big and very imposing as well. It's kind of similar size to this one. And DOT came in and set up an actual website and also had several informational kiosks around town where they put the information up to drivers as to how to use a roundabout, how to drive them, and you know what the thing would look like. So education can help to kind of defray some of the concerns of the public on that. So, as far as the signal goes, give me just a second here. Let me flip over to a different drawing and I'll show you. Thank you.
So here's the intersection. This drawing doesn't currently show where the traffic signals would be, but they would be behind these existing. These are sidewalks here with the curb ramps. This doesn't show the current lane configuration. So depending on what you would do with the lane configuration, the roadway may narrow up a bit. I think Larry will talk a little bit more about that. But traffic signals would sit behind the signal bases and with themselves, with the arms extending out into the traffic lanes, would sit behind the sidewalk shown here. So you'd be able to put your crosswalks in on them. You could actually do it on all four legs. It's not shown in this particular sketch. We're in the kind of a preliminary concept. So, but you can see from this is that here's those same right-of-way lines. I'm sorry, north on this case is now pointing to the left. The school being up here and the remaining development this direction. So sorry for that. The lots, this would be lot 8. This is lot 20. And these right-of-way lines here are the same right-of-way lines from before. So you can see the traffic signal is a little bit smaller, or more standard intersection, has a smaller footprint. It's a little less costly in this case to build that. Not a huge amount different, but there is some cost savings there. The biggest change is that it doesn't impact lots 8 and lots 20 at all, really. The existing right-of-way is sufficient to be able to build that. So. Again, along the same lines as the roundabout, it's familiar to drivers. Everyone's seen and used a traffic signal here. You've got a number of them in town. They can be configured to deal with vehicle demands differently at different times of day. So during the higher flow school, when you're dropping off at school and picking up from school, you could change the configuration to allow to put more priority or more emphasis on a particular movement. And part of the roundabout concerns that we were talking about is that you would, in essence, be adding additional pedestrian control with the three pedestrian signals that Larry was discussing. With the traffic signal, all of that is included in one package, if you will, on the signals themselves, with the four crossings basically each having the ability to be pedestrian activated or timed as far as allowing pedestrian movements to occur. So it's all part of the same general thing. The cons of this is that a traffic signal system is about roughly the same cost as a roundabout, and increased cost, it's maybe slightly less based on some figures. Where it really saves you the cost is in the cost of those three pedestrian activated signals on a roundabout. That's what's really throwing the cost differential in there. I guess, in fairness to say this, because we were saying that the roundabout is generally safer for traffic impacts, the signal then is, conversely, is not as safe as a roundabout. It's still, there's still generally a safe configuration, which is wider use. It is also not as efficient, obviously, as a roundabout. A roundabout can take just a little bit more traffic. It's somewhere in the order. It depends on the exact configuration and which lanes receive which traffic, but generally between 5 to 10%, roughly, I think, are the general numbers that they say that a roundabout could be slightly more efficient. So the signal also does obviously require power and annual power costs and maintenance costs. If the light goes out, you got to change it. So, can you think of other things?
So can you go back to the vicinity map and show me exactly where this is at? Is that actually the entrance to the new elementary school?
Yes, that intersection is this right here.
So basically what you're saying is you're going to have traffic flow from Scooty that's going to come over and tie in align with the school entrance.
Well,
so the gridlock is going to come from, basically going to come from the west side. And it's north and south coming into town with the west side coming in. Because they're not going to utilize that driveway into the school, right?
This is currently, well, currently Scooty's built all the way across here, so this is a, they don't have new aerial photos, unfortunately, but this is actually set up to eventually become a full city street. So this is, it's not currently city right-of-way, correct?
Let me help you out there, but if you look, if there's a slide where you show development, if you look to the east of 14th, at what CBHA has planned, in fact, even further east from there, some of the anecdotal stuff we're hearing perhaps is going to take place, there's going to be a lot of traffic on that Scooty east of 14th. It's going to become a regular city street. Yeah, there's, can't really see everything right there, but they're talking about doing all kinds of stuff in their property, perhaps acquiring more property, as the case may be. So that Scooty's going to be pretty major. And if you look at...
So there's a proposal to run the street straight across and tie in with the existing street that is there now, or what?
Which way, John? Sorry.
Right here. Yes.
The street is already going all the way through.
Go down one more street, and what's going on there?
That's Cypress.
And that's an existing street right now?
Yes, it stops at 14th.
Yeah.
Some of the drawings we've seen from CBHA show that they'd be using Scooty Street as one of their main entrances to the site, particularly if they then look at going to the east, like Wade says, some of the stories we're hearing now. There's been discussion on how to access the CBHA site from 14th, concerns about if they come in off of 14th, how's that going to affect traffic? Whereas if they come in off of Scooty, which is would be built to a full citywide street, there then would be room for them to come up to Scooty. We'd be able to direct the flow of traffic to where there would be an improved intersection because of the impact, obviously, of Ashwood Notch and Wajitas. At one point, rather than having to have additional traffic calming devices up and down 14th, or other improvements on 14th at various intersections. One thing we've looked at in a kind of a comprehensive planning vision for the city along this corridor is we know about some of the growth that's going on, some of the growth that's proposed. We're not sure what's going to happen at the close to the intersection of SR-26, or for that matter, east of where CBHA and Wajitas is being planned, or where Columbia Street would eventually come through to 14th. There's a lot of property to the south of that that could potentially develop. So we're looking at volumes of traffic utilizing 14th in the future, and that future could be as quick as in a couple years. It could be 5 or 10 years down the road. But what we want to do is start planning for it now so that when these new developers come up, we can say, yes, we've looked at the potential for your development, and here's the impact of what your development's going to be on the city, so that they know up front what the costs are that they're going to have to bear so that growth pays for growth.
So, sort of answer your question, John.
Are they required to submit a plat?
Development would. They typically have to do a CEPA checklist.
Yes.
Traffic study, things like that. And that's the tools that we would use then to look at how growth is going to impact the corridor. Say if the Hamptons decide to develop, or DDM Enterprises decides to develop. When they give us the
question is, are we going to continue that street straight through?
Scooty?
Yes.
Right now, it's talked about going to the end of the school site and the CBHA site. There's also a potential for having 18th or 19th Avenue from Cemetery come down.
You're going to take that jog out of there that goes in front of the school?
No.
What's that?
That's just going to be a driveway, though.
No, that's going to be a city street. That's
going to
widen
it up to a full-size street.
It lines up because of a previous screw-up, okay? That's why it ended up like that, okay? So it's going to have to stay like that and become a city street with that jog in it that goes that way.
What was the screw-up?
original site plan that was developed and platted.
For the school district.
And accepted.
Right.
Well, what do the landowners and developers in that area think? I mean, is that a...
As far as?
Well, I mean, would they like to change?
Well, we can't really change it because it comes right across school property there.
Yeah.
Well, what does the school district think of it?
What is what?
I mean, you can change the plat. You can amend it, change it, redo it. I mean, wouldn't it be more feasible to continue straight across?
It probably would have been, but at this point, the school's got their development already laid out there the way it is.
And Scooty Street's already built.
Scooty Street would go right up against the building, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it wouldn't.
Through their parking lot and up against the building.
Mm-hmm.
So we, the bottom line is, Dan, we have to live with this. And so what we're trying to do is make the best we can out of a situation that should never have been allowed to happen, but it did. So that's what it is. And that's what Columbia Basin Health Association is planning on for their, when they're butting up against it. And it's, this is what it's going to be.
And probably looking down the road on Columbia Avenue and 14th, there's going to either be another roundabout and or traffic signal probably needed at that intersection because of the development and or potential development that's going to take place there.
Okay.
Yes?
Great.
I'm talking about Columbia Street and 14th Avenue, Larry.
Mm-hmm.
But potentially we're going to need either a roundabout, yep, or a traffic signal at that intersection as
there's,
well.
There's been discussions about that,
mm-hmm,
particularly with CBHA and the developments they're looking at now and in the future. And then any development south of where Columbia Street would come through, whether it be east or west of 14th, we're thinking that Columbia Street's going to be a major arterial for that portion of the community, connecting 14th all the way to 1st, really.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay.
Continue.
Okay. If there's any questions about safety aspects, I'm sure the chief would be happy to make comments on that. But one thing we wanted to get to next was where we are with the potential for costs. We have three spreadsheets. If we can go to 4A, please. Wanted to explain what's on this spreadsheet here. In looking at assessing costs for impacts, there's a number of different ways to address what different developers of land should be responsible for. One of the simplest is to take just the front footage along the street in question, 14th, and come up with a total amount of distance on both sides of the street. So from Cemetery to SR 26, the total is about 5,130 feet on both sides. Then we take the footage along the street of each of the different property owners, and we look at just a straight ratio of percentage for how much land they have abutting up to the street. So for example, the Othello School District on the west side of 14th, that first block where they have the ball fields, 585 feet, is about 11.4% of the total of 5,130 feet. And the rest of these along the same way. We've broken the property owner description into a number of different categories, and there's a specific reason for that. That has to do with, can the city require developers to pay for impacts or the reconstruction of 14th Avenue? And we found through discussions with city's legal counsel and through the Association of Washington Cities, their MRSC research group, that if a parcel has already developed or has no plans on developing,
the city cannot go to them and say, you're responsible for a certain percentage, unless there's already some sort of agreement or understanding in place for that. So for example, on the school district's property on the west side of 14th, this of course is based just off of the $490,000, which is the match, without any roundabout or without any traffic signals. So we're just using this as a baseline. This $56,000 here is something we cannot go back to the school district on, we believe, to say you're responsible for that. And the second asterisk down at the bottom of the page indicates that the city would be responsible to pay that amount unless the property owner sells or develops the property. The lines with the three asterisks, Othello School District, east of 14th, north of Wahidas, the Hamptons property, DDM Enterprises, are all what we would call, there's no development going on right now, so we cannot go to them and say, at this point you're responsible. The city would have to front that cost and then recoup those funds through what's called a latecomer agreement. In other words, when they do develop, they'll be responsible to pay a certain portion. If the total that has to come up with is $490,000, Hamptons would be responsible for $51,000, DDM for $71,000, etc. But that's only as they develop. So that basically then growth pays for growth. One thing that we discussed with staff and Wade tonight was the Othello School District property east of 14th, the vacant property just north of Wahidas. We had thought that that was a separate parcel from the Wahidas parcel, but we were corrected on that tonight. It looks like since that's part of Wahidas, we may be able to go back to them and say they have to come up with that those funds right now. And the reason is, in the SEPA checklist that the school district did for Wahidas, they discussed traffic impacts. And we've got a little excerpt here that says, the district will need to work with the city to determine what improvements, if any, may be needed. And it discusses in the SEPA checklist and in their traffic study the fact that particularly along 14th Avenue, they realized there would be impact from Wahidas Elementary, and at the time that the city would be constructing 14th, there would be cost sharings. And back to 4A, please. So the bottom line is, of the $490,000, if that's the approach the city takes, the city would be responsible right now at the most for about $262,000 of that, the rest of it being paid for by development. And part of that, an additional $46,000, could actually come from the school district, depending upon how that's reviewed.
A couple things there just to clarify for council is we wouldn't be able to recoup all that cost just yet. Some of that would be in the future. So.
It would be the future. You're right. Yeah. Good point.
Okay.
Yep. Depending upon when it would develop, the latecomers agreement would then come into effect, and that would be part of the costs of that development. And the city's done that on other projects in the past, whether it be street work or utility work. The second spreadsheet, 4B, is the same premise, except it's just for the cost of the matching funds for the grant and traffic signal. So the total is $300,000 more, $790,000, but the breakdown is the same as what we just got done to specify.
The percentage remains the same.
Percentage remains the same. And the premise as far as latecomer agreements, what the city can go to the developers for, or how they can go to the developers, impacts for development, growth pays for growth, would be the same.
Larry, sorry. Another thing to emphasize is that if we hadn't got this TIB grant and the city had funded this out of our own monies and the project cost 2.7 million, these amounts would be far higher.
Definitely.
Far higher. Right now, they only have to share just our matching funds.
Yeah. The total project cost for the road is about 2.45 million, of which TIB is picking up, well, the difference between that and 490,000, so a little under 2 million is what TIB is picking up. The third spreadsheet is 4C is also very similar. It's for the matching funds plus a roundabout at Scoobie and 14th and the pedestrian signals that we talked about earlier, two of them on 14th and one on Scoobie. The total amount there is 925,000 approximately. And again, the percentages are identical. The rationale is identical as far as latecomer agreements, growth, paying for growth through development. This is one way to look at the cost sharing. There are other ways. There's been discussions that perhaps development should pay for more of either the roundabout or the traffic signal. We just wanted to present an easy way or a simple way to look at a cost sharing. And from here, there can be other scenarios developed. Yes, sir.
Is this amount, the 925, also potentially including buying those two lots?
No, not yet. There's matching. There's funds that we're showing for Olson Homes, Ashwood Notch, in this scenario of $167,000. Part of that could be the purchase of the property. Part of that could be just the funds for the impacts. It would have to be a negotiation. That's a good question, though.
Mike? Yeah. What is the estimated annual maintenance cost of a traffic signal?
The typical figures are between, I don't know what your signals cost here in town, but typically they're estimated between $5,000 to $10,000 a year.
Okay.
One of the other items we wanted to discuss, Wade alluded to earlier, was the actual section of the road itself. We've talked about having a center turn lane, one north and one southbound travel lane, and then two parking lanes that would turn into right turn pockets. Well, recently there was discussions also of what could we do for the rest of 14th between Cemetery and Main Street. And in looking at costs, we determined that if we eliminated the two parking lanes slash right turn pocket lanes, we'd have enough, we believe, to do a 2-inch overlay all the way from Cemetery to Main on 14th, replace any subgrade repairs that are needed because of bad subgrade, replace some sidewalk, some curbing that are in need of it, and replace the sidewalk ramps that are right now in along 14th between Cemetery and Main.
To bring them up to ADA standards.
Bring them up to ADA standards, yes. So we discussed this with the funding agency. And thanks to a timely phone call from Wade to the TIB director, it looks like the city would be able to decrease the width of the road, eliminating the right turns pocket slash parking lanes. And that should be sufficient funds to do the overlay, all the other improvements up to Main.
And just to interrupt again, Larry, I warned you I'd do this.
That's okay, that's no problem.
The chief is in favor of this, the reason being because studies have found that wider roads tend to lead to higher speeds. And so if we eliminate the parking lane, which if you look at the long 14th, we don't really need per se, and still not eliminate all the turn pockets, maybe a couple of key intersections, sure, leaving those there. It would make the road safer because it would slow people down a little bit. They wouldn't get that perception if they're going slower than they really are. And so that's another reason of safety for this, for this.
Yes. By doing this, the CIB has said that the city has the ability to decrease that road width without having to go to the TIB board to ask for the ability to do this. The kicker is the funds that would be saved, if we want to apply that to the overlay, we would have to go to the TIB board to get their approval for that portion of the project, because it was not included in the original grant application.
The board chairman indicated to me on the phone call that he would be supportive of that with the board. So, and we wouldn't be locked in until, I mean, we could still go to Plan A.
Sure.
If they didn't approve this, so we wouldn't risk anything. So we would, a group would go to the board and argue our point here and ask to improve the roads, as it is a need of improvement, the overlay from Cemetery up to Main. So,
and that meeting is the third week of January in Olympia. And we'll be working with staff and the TIB staff and the director to come up with what's the best word? Come up with a plan to present this project to them in hopes that they'll approve that.
Okay. I do want to hear from the chief about the roundabout red light safety crossing for the kids, being it's right on the school.
Thank you, ladies and gentlemen. Both have pluses and minuses. The traffic circle is safer for cars. As Mike said, we eliminate the T-bone accidents, that's the perpendicular accidents, which is the most dangerous accident most of us will ever be in. And we end up with glancing blows, so all of the accidents going around that would be glancing blows. Now that's for people in cars. Obviously, pedestrians aren't protected by a car, and any impact is dangerous. And so the issue is trying to manage, you know, the flow of students in this case, because this is right in front of a school. And can we go to the one picture that had the picture of the school on it? The school did a really good job. Let's see if I can make this thing work. There's a trick. There we go. The school did a really good job right up here. And John, where you were talking about, you know, this here, yes, parents will still have to drive across this because this is the student drop-off right here. This is for buses up here. So the school did a really good job of separating buses and cars. And that's what we want to see. The next thing is you've got to separate the pedestrians. Now, in this case, the pedestrians are going to have to walk across whatever intersection that we put here. So, you know, whether they're not going to walk down to an intersection down here, they're going to look at this as a walkthrough. So if we go with a roundabout, we're going to have to, and what you saw in the roundabout pictures was pedestrian, basically safety islands, where there's a place where they're protected somewhat as they walk through. But you know, when this goes through, we are going to see, I believe, a lot of traffic coming straight through here. I'm seeing them cut in the mornings. They're cutting through these streets right here to get into town. And going home, they're cutting through here. As I've gone down and watched the school traffic in the mornings, I haven't watched it in the afternoons yet, but looking at that school traffic in the mornings, there is quite a bit of traffic coming through where they are driving in and dropping their kids off. And especially as it gets colder, you see more of that. There's not a lot of kids walking that route. Unfortunately, before they finished the street here, we were seeing, you know, the kids walking across the field through the construction equipment, but there is no sidewalk here. You will see kids walking down the sidewalk to get to these areas, and no matter where we put some kind of crosswalk, we're going to have to manage that traffic flow. So the issue there is which one's safer. I think that, you know, I've talked to friends that have roundabouts in their towns. They have done the studies. They did see an increase of minor vehicle accidents, but they didn't try to mix grade school kids and pedestrians with the roundabout. It was mostly just cars. But I also saw in Bellingham, where they do have a very, they have a lot of roundabouts, so these little ones, they're right in the middle of their bus depots, and people seem to be navigating them fine.
So I'm still not clear, if you're going to have that lower street continue through, then basically that section of Scootney that goes into the, to the parking lot there, is just basically a driveway.
I don't think Cypress is going to go through.
No, this is not going through here.
That's just the property.
But why wouldn't we make that be Scootney Street?
Because Scootney is an arterial.
And just have Scootney and at 14.
I hear what you're saying.
And then make that a driveway going into the elementary school.
Because Scootney's the arterial, it comes all the way from the west side, all the way across town. And that's what people use.
Scootney is a 90-foot wide street, so it's a fairly...
Yeah, but you're not going to go any farther east. If that's the case, then you turn down and you go get on the next road and you go across.
Well, and that's what we're trying to avoid is what's called cut-through traffic, and that's what we're seeing a lot of right now, where people are coming down Scootney and they're cutting across, what is that?
10th
there, right through another school. The folks that are coming, you know, that are coming off of 26th are coming down these two streets and meeting up with Scootney. And that's all cut-through traffic. And it's, these streets in here are very narrow, and it's not conducive to a lot of traffic coming through. We want people to drive fairly slow through those. Scootney, as wide as it is, it is conducive to a lot more vehicle traffic. And even if that traffic is moving up and moving, you know, north, or even moving south and going into this development as it happens, we're already invested, as the manager said, in that as an arterial. I would not want to see it diverted into the smaller streets. I don't know if that answered your question. Yeah. I can see pluses and minuses to both.
Mike, is there a maintenance on those crosswalk lights also?
I can answer that. I don't know. It's not probably as much as the traffic signal.
But yeah, they have lights. They still require power, so they still.
And how does that work on those as far as, you know, you got 15 kids in a line? Does it change each time one gets across, or is it a timed?
It's,
and what is that going to do for traffic behind that light with kids crossing? How is that going to be any different than having a stoplight and, you know, for lack of better terms, killing two birds with one stone?
Because there is a lot of traffic up there in the morning.
Right. Well, that's a great question. And that configuration, I think you see that the distance, I don't know if I can go back to that roundabout. You know, distance from the roundabout to the pedestrian signals is not very far, so there's not a lot of distance for cars to queue up, so they may very well back up into the roundabout itself when you hit that signal. And yeah, it is a timed signal because they've got to have enough time to get across, and there's minimum times that you set those for, so that it's not just each kid that runs up there and pushes it. Although,
and you're still stopping anyway.
Correct. Yeah, you're still stopping. You're just not right at the intersection. You're further away.
Right.
One thing we've seen in other communities that have these pedestrian-actuated signals is school crossing guards that will gather, a queue of kids together and then actuate the signal so that it's not just one or two at a time, but it is a good number of them.
I was being a little facetious.
Yeah, understood. Yeah, I've seen that happen, too.
Will the plan be to expand Scootney to make it as wide as the west side?
Yes, I believe so, yes.
Well, it's not showing it right now.
No.
Is that something in the future?
That would be part of the development of CBHA and the school district. Because they had indicated at the time that they built Wajitas that when such time came as the other half of Scootney developed east of 14th, that they would develop their portion as well. And one thing also to consider, we don't know what's going to happen east of Wajitas or the CBHA property. There could be sufficient growth there that road will need to go through, or possibly Columbia Street would need to go through. Unfortunately, the crystal ball is kind of muddy there, and we're not sure where exactly growth is going to go back there. But as long as the city is planning for something to happen, we'll be money ahead.
Okay. On the, I got a couple questions.
Yes, sir.
On the traffic signal, it could be adjusted for different traffic flows during the day, because the heavy traffic flows during the morning, you know, before school and after school. Pretty much in between that, there's very little traffic.
It could be flashing yellow on 14th and flashing red on Scutney until such time as, like you said, the traffic in the morning and afternoon, then it cycles around. We can adjust the time, how long it stays red on either of the east-west or north-south routes. And some of that may be just trial and error to see what works best, if that's the route that's chosen.
Okay, my next question was, you were talking about making 14th from Cemetery up to Main Street,
mm-hmm.
a three-lane. Limiting the turn lanes?
No, that would remain with the two lanes.
Okay.
So it's still narrowed down there?
Yeah.
Okay.
Is there any plan on what is going to go on with that stop sign?
There's been discussions about that. There's been recommendations that once this happens, to remove that stop sign on 14th, so it's just on Ash. It was originally put in when the school district developed, and it was recommended in their traffic study, but that was before Scutney went through.
I noticed we got a few of the property owners that are adjacent to that. Well, actually, all of them are here. Is it possible we could just kind of hear their opinion? We've heard our engineers in the city and...
Would any of the property owners care to approach and make a comment? Or do you want to reserve your right to make comments until later? Okay. Pete, do you want to come up?
Maybe I misheard, but just the street with four stop signs, the cheapest. The roundabouts the middle, and the traffic lights the most money?
Roundabouts.
Okay. All right. And then I'd like to see a map showing like where my 930 feet is specifically. And then
do we have a copy of a map here in your documents that you produced?
You don't.
Not tonight. Okay.
And then on the traffic study, I don't know. I'd like to have somebody else look at it. You know, if the city works for you, they do the traffic study, it kind of could be a conflict of interest.
Certainly you have that right, Pete, to take a look at it and have somebody else look at our traffic study.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Right now, that's all I've got. So.
Okay.
I'll speak to the school board of the school district, but I have a couple questions as well.
Okay, fine, Rock.
Just to try to figure out on the roundabout, so it looked like it's a one-lane roundabout, is that true? So I'm not very familiar with how those work. Who has a right-of-way on a one-way roundabout? So if I'm coming north on 14th, and someone is coming out of Wahidas on the right, who has a right-of-way in that situation?
The vehicle in the roundabout typically has the right of way. So the person coming into it has to yield to that vehicle already circling.
Okay. The reason I ask that, even with the traffic we have now there, a lot of times people are sitting in that Wahidas drive for a long time because it's just, the traffic never lets up coming north. And I was wondered if the two-lane roundabout, I can see how sometimes you can sneak in the right lane because they're in the middle lane, but I just wondered if that would help with that. Also, for clarification, John did ask you if Scutney was going to be widened. It's going to be widened after the jog in it, potentially, but the current existing full Scutney will not be widened. Am I right on that?
We were under the impression that...
Just to the east?
east of 14.
Because the Phillips School District owns that entire road there. It becomes a half road at the southernmost part of the property. There's still options there because CBHA has another part of it, so I would just want clarification.
Sure.
So your understanding is that the school district is going to allow their property to be used to widen the...
On their half of it.
Okay, we own the whole thing, though.
And then CBHA is working with the school district on that later, sure.
CBHA, I'm just talking about this right here.
Yeah.
This is school district property here. It's school right here. So school district on both sides of this part, but only half of this.
It's our understanding the CBHA has been in discussions with the school district on that, but we don't know all the details.
Okay. I think that was my only questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Rob. Mr. Michaels?
I'm Devin Michael, and Garen and I own DDM Enterprises. I have one of my questions. I just got this about 2 o'clock this afternoon, so in between running the ranch and everything else, I haven't had any time to look at it. I was wondering what percentage of the traffic makes it past up to Scooby, and it enters 26 and goes on through and stuff. Yeah, and
I haven't got any traffic, any of your guys' traffic studies or any of that. Does somebody want to end Mr. Michaels the
right there.
Pointer? There we go. Showing them how to use it.
Okay. So I was wondering how much the traffic that enters down here on 26 at 14th Avenue, how much of it makes it past here, or past the school district?
And up into town?
And it goes on the way, all the way into town, if there's any studies on that. I'm a little concerned about paying for 14.7% of all the traffic and for the cost of the street construction when it benefits the rest of the traffic that goes on through. Or the rest of the businesses or housing and the city of Othello. That's north of this school district and north of this proposed street. So,
Larry, are you prepared to answer that tonight or not?
If I could get back to you on that, we appreciate that. We can get an answer for that.
And then it'd be really nice if you guys can make sure you mail me. Yeah, mail it, DDM Enterprises, this stuff.
I promise you I would, and then I fell down on the job, so I apologize.
Well, yeah, it'd be a lot. I'm usually more prepared when I have to deal with this stuff, so. But it'd be nice to get that.
We'll keep it.
Rather than at 2 o'clock, the day of the meeting. So if it wasn't for Pete, I wouldn't even be here tonight. So, I'd just rather make my comments with being a little more informed and stuff, but
okay.
That's one of my big point immediately that I can see is, that how much traffic enters 26 at 14th Avenue and makes it up past Wahida School and past this proposed house, because it's rather unfair to make the landowners here who have yet to develop their properties pay for a huge amount of the cost to handle all that traffic that really just keeps on going through.
Devin, tonight the purpose of the meeting was informational, so no decisions are being made. However, I would anticipate the outcome of the January TIB meeting in Olympia is going to tell us a lot more about what our exact plans that the council will go through. So as we continue to gather this information, we're taking down notes, and it's on part of our minutes and the minutes of tonight's meeting. We'll provide you and the other property owners the information that you guys are looking for.
Mm-hmm.
And then as we have subsequent meetings, we'll notify you so that you can participate in the process. Okay?
Okay. All right.
And I apologize for tonight.
Hey, it's not a big deal. It happens.
Okay.
Thank you.
Yes.
We've covered a lot of ground, and I thank you for your patience. A lot of this is intricate, and like the mayor says, there will be ongoing discussions. And we just kind of wanted to wrap up by asking, where do we go from here?
Hold on, before we go any further.
Okay.
Linda Bowers, do you have any comments or questions you want to ask the city council at this time? I found that out just about 6 o'clock tonight. We apologize. Sometimes we get task-oriented as a city, and we tend to conduct business, and we are trying to become a better at our communication, especially with like this, for instance, a development that could potentially impact you financially and the rest of the property owners. And so we're going to make better attempts here going forward. I do appreciate your comments that you've made here in this process, because it helps us do a better job, and it helps you be more informed and also to interact and do business with the city of Othello. So thank you. Go ahead, Larry.
Sorry about that. Where do we go from here? We've talked about a number of major issues. Two of them have been to determine the Scutney Street intersection, whether we leave it as is with a four-way stop, a traditional traffic signal, or a roundabout with pedestrian-activated signals. And then also determine the necessity of the parking lanes slash right-turn pockets, lessening the width of the road. Do we want to do that? And if so, will we be able to use those cost savings either on overlaying 14th from Cemetery up to Main Street? Or are there other applications for those funds that the funding agency will allow us to do? And as the mayor says, as we progress through working with the TIB and staff, those answers will shake out. And with council's continued review and input, hopefully we'll be able to get to an answer here that we can then finalize design and get the project constructed.
Very good.
Thank you.
So that concludes our current business for tonight. Is there any committee reports that are going to be presented? Item four, unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business that needs to come before tonight's meeting? Number five, new business. Is there any new business council would like staff to research and be prepared for at our next meeting? Well, with that, I would like to recognize Eric Pegg. Eric is the reporter from the Othello Outlook, this is his last council meeting tonight, the last reporting of the city. Tomorrow is his last day at the Othello Outlook. He's returning home to Cle Elum. We certainly appreciate him attending these meetings, coming back on Mondays and going through minutes and writing the stories that report the government's business and political action. And we certainly want to send you out with our blessing, Eric, but we also want to let you know that we've appreciated everything you've done here, and we're very sorry to see you go. Thank you. And with that, no further business, I'll adjourn the meeting.